Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, and I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. On today's episode, Mayor Eric Adams. Shortly after the NYPD cleared protesters at Columbia and made nearly 300 arrests across New York college campuses, Mayor Adams says it shouldn't have ever gotten this far.
You have to, must have a zero tolerance. When the first tent went up, we should have removed it.
And Representative Ro Khanna, the Silicon Valley congressman, weighs in on the U.S. push for ByteDance to divest or ban TikTok.
I'm a free speech person, and you can't ban the speech of 170 million Americans or the livelihoods based on future possible harm.
Those conversations, plus the Fed holding rates steady. Novo Nordisk is gaining from weight loss drugs, Tesla's internships reneged, and Amazon CEO Andy Jassy in trouble with a federal labor regulator.
That is ridiculous.
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 I'm with you.
It's Thursday, May 2nd, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Andrew by in 3, 2, 1, cue Andrew.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. It's just the boys this morning. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kernan. Becky is on assignment. We're going to see her tomorrow from Omaha, where the Berkshire Annual Hathaway meeting is getting set to begin this weekend. Meantime, let's...
First up today on the podcast, big news from the Federal Reserve. Fed Chair Jay Powell basically ruled out the possibility of a rate hike in the Fed's next decision.
It's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I do think the evidence shows, you know, pretty clearly that policy is restrictive and is weighing on demand. I don't see the stag or the inflation, actually.
The central bank is holding rates steady in light of persistent inflation. And markets jumped on the news, at one point rallying 530 points. Joe Kernan caught up with Stifel's chief economist, Lindsay Piegza, to chat more about the announcement.
We went from the Fed giving the markets at least the idea of 6 or 7 rate cuts. We went from that to like 3, and then we heard, I don't know, we're not there yet, but we're closer, and it's definitely coming. Now it's like, well, we feel like we're restrictive in that this is going to work, but we're not really sure. We don't think we're going to need any hikes. But it reminds me, on the way in, if you really misunderestimated, and it's a great George Bush term, but if you really misunderestimated inflation on the way in, why couldn't the Fed have that same sort of mindset right now? That could turn out to be wrong. That once again, they're underestimating the chances that inflation stays worse than they think.
Well, I think it's very clear that they already are. If we look at the summary of economic projections, now we didn't get one yesterday, but we do have the one from March. The Fed anticipated a much more benign level of inflation than we're seeing, than what's been realized. So clearly the expectation for even a reduced forecast of 3 rate cuts in 2024 is outdated at this point. So the Fed continuing to perpetuate this notion of patience, but it's going to be a rate cut as the next move, really underscores, I think, the Fed's inability to handicap some of these different scenarios should inflation continue to evolve in a manner that's opposite of what the Fed is anticipating. As we've seen since January, price pressures have not just stabilized, but most metrics have pushed higher, away from that 2% target. But again, the Fed is very optimistic that the next move will be a rate cut, seemingly ignoring the scenario that they may be forced to re-engage if that second part of the mandate fails to be met, meaning price stability.
Novo Nordisk reported a 28% jump in net profit, beating expectations. Sales of the popular weight loss drug Wegovy more than doubled in the quarter. Wegovy now has 130,000 weekly prescriptions in the U.S., and the company raised its outlook for 2024. You'd do it, and you think someday you will.
I think we all will. Some version of it.
BMIs are bad. Fatness is bad.
Yeah.
It causes everything.
Yeah.
It causes everything. Everything, even sleep apnea, it causes. So there's a reason to lose weight. I'm still stuck with wanting to do it the way you're supposed to do it. I just, and I saw someone yesterday who I know did the Wegovy thing, and it looks like the guy was 40 pounds lighter than a month ago.
Yeah.
Or two months ago.
And you think
that's
not good?
I just want to know whether the shock of me looking at the way he looked and that the face and everything, is it just because of how quickly it happened that I wasn't expecting it, or do you really look like you're dying when you take this stuff? Like the sallow...
Can I tell you what's going on?
Yes, please.
So there's two problems with people who are on these drugs. Because they're on these drugs, they don't exercise as much.
Because they don't have any energy. Sounds horrible.
No, it's not because they don't have any energy. Because they think to themselves, I'm thin. I don't need to exercise as much as I used to. So they're not building muscle. That's the first part.
Okay.
So a lot of the facial issue that you're talking about is like muscles are lost in the face because people just stop doing any kind of exercise whatsoever. The other thing is, and this actually has to do with the muscle piece, they stop eating protein.
Because of the drug.
People who are on these drugs almost need to force feed themselves protein. And on a percentage basis, a big part of what you eat every day has to be protein to begin with. But in this case, it has to be a massive piece because you're not having that many calories to begin with.
If I even thought you were thinking about it,
I will follow
you around and grab that thing and not let you. Because if you were to do that, that would be...
You'd be jealous.
I would not be jealous. You do not need it. And I can't imagine.
I'm not saying I would do it now.
But I can't imagine what you'd look like.
Make it easier for everybody.
I could make some strides.
Okay, let's talk about this. This is a fascinating story. We are involved in this to some degree. I disagree with the judge, but what am I supposed to say? A National Labor Relations Board judge ruling yesterday that Amazon CEO Andy Jassy violated federal labor law in comments that he made in 2022 on this program, on Bloomberg TV, and then at the New York Times Deal Book Conference with me. Here is at least one of the comments that he made on Squawk Box that raised red flags for the Labor Relations Board, and you can decide.
A place like Amazon empowers employees, if they see something they can do better for customers or for themselves, then go meet in a room, decide how to change it, and change it. That type of empowerment doesn't happen when you have unions. It's much more bureaucratic. It's much slower.
And then at the Deal Book Conference, we continued that conversation. Jassy made some similar comments about the workplace being slow and bureaucratic with the union. The judge ruled that Jassy's remarks violated labor law, he said, because they went beyond merely commenting on the employee-employer relationship. The judge recommending that Amazon be ordered to cease and desist from such comments in the future and be required to post a notice about the order to employees nationwide. An Amazon spokesperson saying yesterday that the company disagrees with the ruling and intends to appeal. I mean, at some point, it's just that is not intimidating employees to say these things.
I welcome your pushback. I just think you're being way too guarded.
Guarded?
That is ridiculous.
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 I'm with you.
Tell me about... So just explain to me. Now, the NLRB is totally political, depending on who's in the White House, who they put on that thing. And there's sometimes there's two Republicans and one other times.
Right.
And you can just see, depending on who's on it, they're on both sides. Is this judge is appointed by a Democrat? Is that how this worked?
I don't know the history of
it's
this
not,
judge.
Well, who's
but
on
I,
the,
I, have,
this,
I would imagine.
Is this one of the NLRB?
How many an NLRB
are there?
Judge.
How many are there?
That's a good question. I don't know
that.
Because
that usually there's a majority usually of one party or the other.
I'm sure. Obviously,
but that's
the NLRB
ridiculous.
Today.
He said, and
yes,
stop the presses. Things are more How about around here? Around here in New York City, if you want to do something, well, you've talked about it many times. Yeah. If you want to do some kind of construction or even putting a mic out, we're not supposed to touch a mic, right? Although we're not, let's not get into that. But there are times, where some of the rules seem absolutely, and they
insane.
Okay, Broadway. You can't do anything.
Can't do anything.
That's why it costs so much. Yes. You need someone brought in to move chair.
I don't want to hurt myself for saying this. You want to get the subways fixed in New York City. You've seen the prices in New York
City.
And
that's the same
reason. The city's paying 4 or 5 times, 500% more than they should be paying than like other places in the world.
Because.
Let's keep that unspoken. Construction working business is more complicated than the Broadway folks.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. There's some other people we need to worry about in some of these businesses, too.
Reports say, and we were talking about this earlier, Tesla's interns that were incoming into Tesla have now been receiving calls that their internship offers have been rescinded. This is part of the latest round of cost cutting. It's according to a Bloomberg report and cites LinkedIn posts and interviews with university students who said that their offers had been revoked about 3 weeks before their start date. This comes, of course, amid the new layoffs this week, and reports say that two high-profile executives and most of the company's 500-person supercharger division have been cut. Lots of consternation, by the way, on the supercharger piece of this because, you know, they're opening superchargers all over the country, and some of them, you know, the construction projects are going to stop. What does that mean, by the way, for EV adoption?
For adoption?
One of the things that, you know, I gave Elon a lot of credit for was he opened up his supercharger network to all EVs.
Right.
And so now we're going to have this sort of potentially halted network. Some of the salespeople, some of the construction people, all of it seems to be up in the air at the moment.
Well, but if you had an internship.
Yes.
And you thought you were going.
Your summer internship, right? We're
you
coming
would
in
think,
on May.
Wow,
here.
I'm going to Tesla to be an intern. And that would be very disappointing. Doesn't seem fair. I guess there must be some pay involved with the internships.
One of the things that happened, as you know, over the last decade is we've moved towards paying interns.
Paid interns, yeah.
You know, the old, you know, look, I grew up and I was able to do it in part because my parents were able to subsidize me, but I had an unpaid internship, right?
They still do a little bit.
I showed up and was, you know, getting the coffee for people and was very happy to do it for free. I could afford to do it. A lot of people couldn't. People thought that was unfair because it put people who were able to be in that position to be able to do it and others not. So then they said, you got to pay all the interns. But then flip side of that is that some people are like a Tesla when they can't afford to do it. It's a different story.
The owners of the Philadelphia 76ers, alongside of Fanatic CEO Michael Rubin, who used to be a minority owner of the 76ers, are buying and distributing more than 2,000 tickets for tonight's Game 6 against the New York Knicks, is according to a tweet from Michael Rubin, who said, "We absolutely cannot let Knicks fans take over our arena again." He said the tickets would be given, this is kind of cool, to first responders, healthcare professionals, and other Philly-based organizations, as long as you can prove that you're not like a plant, like not really a 76ers fan.
Right.
This is after a large contingent of Knicks fans showed up for Game 3 in Games 4. This has been really an unbelievable series. And tonight's game, given what happened at the end of
the last one,
the last game.
What do you think? How many games does this go?
I want it to go.
You want it to go all the way.
I do. And I've never really been, you know, I went to school right when Larry Bird came and Magic, you know, the Indiana State, Michigan State. So I was living in Boston. So I kind of have an affinity for the Celtics. But also my daughter was, you know, I've been to a lot of, I like the 76ers too at times. But Jalen Brunson, suddenly this is an all new Knicks team.
Long suffering. We need to win.
We got, right.
I'm a New Yorker.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, Mayor Eric Adams joins us less than 48 hours after New York police entered Columbia's campus and arrested around 100 protesters.
When protests cross the line and goes into an area of violence, destruction of property, that is no longer protest. That's not what democracy is about. That is chaos, and we're not going to accept that in the city.
We'll be right back.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. We've been covering the escalating protests on college campuses for the past 2 weeks, including the NYPD's overnight arrests this week on college campuses in New York.
We will not stop, we will not rest, this close.
Columbia called the New York City police for assistance after protesters stormed and occupied an academic building. Mayor Eric Adams said the protest had basically been co-opted by outside agitators intending to sow chaos. The police will remain on campus until May 17th. Mayor Adams joined us this morning less than 48 hours after the NYPD cleared the protesters. Here's Andrew kicking off that conversation.
Hundreds of people arrested at college campuses in New York City and across the nation. The NYPD was called in on Tuesday night after protesters occupied Hamilton Hall on Columbia's campus and has since arrested protesters at City College and Fordham University. And for the remainder of the semester, all classes and final exams will be fully remote at Columbia. New York City Mayor Eric Adams joins us this morning. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us. Before we get into sort of where we go from here, what is the state of play in the city at around the universities that we've just been talking about in your mind?
The state of the city is stable, and we continue to thrive, as I say over and over again. We have the finest police department on the globe, and we see that every day when they execute ways of allowing people of the right of a democracy to protest, but send a clear message that if you break the law, there will be actions taken.
When you look at what's happened at Columbia and you think about, to the extent there are leadership lessons, there's a lot of folks who say this needed to be nipped in the bud much earlier. Others say, talk about freedom of speech and the like, that this should have been allowed to continue. Where do you stand? And if you were to look back even over the last several weeks and you could rewind time, what do you think should have happened?
Well, I fall on the side of the importance of protesting. I protested as a youth. I even protested as a police officer. After taking off my uniform, I joined those issues that were important to me. But when protests cross the line and goes into an area of violence, destruction of property, that is no longer protest. That's not what democracy is about. That is chaos, and we're not going to accept that in a city. And that's what we saw on Columbia. So when you're doing a reflection, clearly, I stated it over and over again, you must have a zero tolerance. When the first tent went up, we should have removed it. And hats off to the Fordham University president. That was the mindset she took. She did not allow this to go several days. She took decisive action, and the police department collaborated with them.
Do you think the president of Columbia should remain the president of Columbia?
That's up to the board. I think that she's handling the academic achievements of the institution. The board would have to evaluate. I don't think any of these presidents knew something like this can evolve at this level. Now it's time to look at it as a teaching moment. The experts that understand how to maintain a disorder should be advisors, and they should take the input from them. And that's what I believe you're seeing more and more now.
Now that you've made these arrests, I imagine there's investigations going on. How much of this do you think is organic, meaning that students on their own have taken to these protests? And how much do you think this is outside agitators, if you will, professional protesters that are trying to create these moments?
And that's such an important question that you're asking, because that's a question that we've been asking every day. And I use the analogy that if you have a group of students who have the energy to see change, but you have one professor or one teacher who's given them misappropriate or misinformation on how to do that, you could disrupt that entire classroom and that entire moment of energy. That is what we're seeing here. People are asking, is it 50% outsiders? What's the percentage? Doesn't matter the percentage. We know based on our intel and evidence that there are individuals who are instructing students to do bad things. And they are participating in some illegal actions. And that is what we're focused on. One of the persons or individuals involved, a husband was arrested for terrorism. We cannot downplay the desire of hijacking this entire rightful protest and using terrible ways to move this agenda forward.
What do you think is happening? I mean, on a very personal level, what do you think is happening on these campuses? And I ask, by the way, and I should commend you, one of the things you did at Columbia, and it's a great moment if people haven't seen it, where you took down one of the Palestinian flags and you put up an American flag. And you said you take it, you know, this was personal for you. But what do you think is happening underneath all of this on these campuses?
And the actual person who took it down was Commissioner Daughtry. I really commend him, communicating with him, that we have to send the right signal. Being mayor is not only substantive, passing budgets and et cetera, but it's symbolic. And I am concerned from what I'm seeing, what I'm reading, and what I've been talking to my colleagues. I'm concerned about a real targeted approach to radicalize our young people, using some of the despair that came out of COVID, using the loneliness, isolation. This is what radicalization can do. And I believe some of these steps we're seeing across America is similar to some of the things we saw in other countries. And we need to pay attention. Anytime you see a poll that states only 18% of 18 to 34 year olds do not feel this is extremely excited about this country and love this country, that should be a wake-up call for us. What is our farm team looking at? What is our AAA team looking at, using the sports analogy? Who is coming up through the ranks, and how do they feel about this country?
You have been outspoken about this, but there have been a whole number of people in the Democratic Party that have not. We have not really heard directly from President Biden, at least to be nearly as vocal as you have. There's a fascinating article in The Wall Street Journal this morning. It says Biden needs to learn from the Democrats' disaster in 68. The lesson of that tumultuous political summer is clear. The fireworks may be on the party's left, but the votes needed for victory are on the right. What do you say to President Biden and to other members of the party that haven't been as outspoken as you?
Well, you know, these guys have political strategists that are quite smarter than I am. I don't understand all the strategies that will go into a national election. I could communicate what people are feeling here in the city because I'm among them. I'm on the subways. I'm walking the streets. I'm talking to people. And I hear how concerned they are about the future of their children, the future of their families. And we need to address those issues in a very real way. I'm a blue-collar mayor. I say it over and over again. And I have a blue-collar approach to life.
You made the point, Mayor, that you don't just pass budgets, that you're the symbolic leader as well. And, you know, you're just New York City. I mean, these are occurring everywhere now. And it just seems really important for President Biden to symbolically calm everyone down, maybe, or give everyone a pep talk or whatever you want to look at. And, but he looks like he's held hostage by the same strategists that you said, you know, are smarter than you about doing things. I'm not so sure. But those strategists, you know, we're not sure exactly how to handle, Prime Minister Netanyahu. We're not sure about a lot of this. And a lot of it seems to be based on worries about either getting votes or losing votes in November with certain parts of the population. But that's not what we need right now.
Well, I think our country is at a very pivotal, important place. We are resilient as a country and as a city, and we're going to display that resiliency. But you can get through a war, but the casualties and the devastation could be a long-term impact. I think we're in a place right now where we need to really focus on our children and families and not allow people to take them off the course of what this great country has to offer and this great city has offered.
Mr. Mayor, I want to pivot just because one of the other issues that a lot of business leaders in New York specifically are focused on, and frankly, actually, business leaders around the country are focused on, is the border and immigration, illegal immigration, of course, being the key here. Where do things stand in the city, and where do things stand between your relationship, frankly, and the Biden administration on this issue?
Well, you're seeing here, we're still managing. I think we're in the area of 194,000 migrants and asylum seekers that have entered New York City. And we put in place a very real ways of managing this crisis. And because of the programs we put in place, over 65% of them have continued on with their journey. Many people who are entered through the borders are paroled in legally. I think we have to address the work aspect of this, and we need to control this crisis and turn it into opportunities. We all know that there are many municipalities that are decreased in population. They're looking for workers. I think when someone comes across the border, we should assign them where they're going and tell them, here's where America needs you, and stay there for 3 years, work, be part of the society, and then you could travel throughout the country and live whatever you want. The way we're doing it now, we're allowing the crisis to control us, and not that we should be controlling the crisis and turning it into opportunities.
Mr. Mayor, I want to thank you for joining us, as always.
Thank you.
We look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Take care.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, California Congressman Ro Khanna serves on the Committee on Strategic Competition between the U.S. and the CCP. And he's keeping a close eye on geopolitics heading into the 2024 election.
If we allow Putin to invade Ukraine, we're sending a message to China that they can go into Taiwan. And so we need to prevent it.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC today with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Joe.
Taking aim at Chinese companies over suspected support for Russia in its war against Ukraine. These include new rounds of sanctions. Washington has repeatedly warned China about supporting Russia's armed forces. Join us now to talk about this. And also the latest on the potential fate of TikTok in this country, Congressman Ro Khanna of California, whose district is in the heart of Silicon Valley. He serves as a member of the Select Committee on what to do with the Chinese Communist Party. And it's good to have you with us today, Congressman.
Great to see you, Joe. Always a pleasure to be on.
Is this a red line moment? And I just saw an editorial about that the president was very strident about saying that this is unacceptable if China were to help Russia in terms of armaments. Has the line been crossed, and can we really do anything?
It is a red line, Joe. It's important to realize that, as you know, these are not just sanctions on some of the firms in China. It also includes Turkey, Slovakia, Belgium, and a number of other countries. And they're very targeted. They say you can't be supplying Putin with weapons to kill civilians in Ukraine. And the United States needs to be concerned about the growing relationship between Russia and China. Xi Jinping and Putin have visited each other about 30 times. And this is why it's so important, and why I'm glad Speaker Johnson allowed a vote on the aid to Ukraine that many, all Democrats and many Republicans supported. Because if we allow Putin to invade Ukraine, we're sending a message to China that they can go into Taiwan. And so we need to prevent it.
I guess there's a lot of conjecture swirling around. You know, we do have an election coming up, and in an interview, I guess former President Trump said that he would definitely be more I guess, make a commitment to Taiwan to help defend Taiwan, something China really doesn't want. Do you think China is either hoping for President Biden to be reelected or even trying in certain ways to make that happen? Do you believe any of those stories?
Well, Joe, you know I'm a huge supporter of President Biden's, but the one issue that we really should try to keep out of politics is to make sure China doesn't go into Taiwan. I've worked with Mike Gallagher, who was the chair of the China Committee. We've, in a bipartisan way, made sure that we're supporting having naval superiority in the Pacific, that we supplied Taiwan with long-range weapons for deterrence. And there should be a unified message here that China militarily will not be able to go into Taiwan. And I think that should be regardless of who's in Congress or who's president.
Most of the does that include keeping a lot of the tariffs on, which we've seen? A lot of these things that we thought would be reversed have not been reversed because of the realities of the situation.
Well, look, I supported some of the strategic tariffs. I'm not one of these people who says just because a previous Republican president did it, by definition, it has to be wrong. The reality is China was eating our lunch. We had manufacturing go over to China, steel left, aluminum left, textiles left. You know, I never understood it. If someone said America doesn't need finance, let London do all the finance. We don't need Wall Street. We'd never agree. Or America doesn't need to make movies. Let India make all the movies. And yet we did that to manufacturing. So, of course, we need to rebalance our trade deficit. I think we should have a goal not to have this structural trade deficit with China by the end of the decade.
We've talked TikTok before, but I can't remember whether you're a ban if not divest or a free speech. There's a lot of people, and it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, people have differing opinions on this. What should we be doing? And Andrew can get involved, because Andrew, you think it's a future threat, not necessarily a present day security threat. I don't know if you can weigh in on that as well.
Well, I agree it may be a future threat, but I'm a free speech person, and you can't ban the speech of 170 million Americans or the livelihoods based on future possible harm. And I think there should have been more narrowly tailored legislation. Let me give you three specifics. We should have said that any transference of American data to China is illegal, and you could have held TikTok and Oracle executives accountable for that, Oracle, because they're managing it. We should have said any state interference in an algorithm is illegal. And again, you could have held American investors or executives accountable. And we need a strong data privacy. But you don't have to ban 170 million Americans off an app.
What is your sense? So obviously, many of your colleagues don't just talk. Like, I talk about this as a prospective threat, meaning I don't know if I have sympathy for the argument, but I understand the argument. It's unclear to me whether there's direct evidence, as the kids would say, receipts today of genuine nefarious behavior that TikTok is engaged in on behalf of the Chinese government. And I know we can have a debate about whether TikTok's good or bad for kids, and I don't think it's great for kids and all of that. But what do you say to your colleagues? And they also suggest, but again, they can't tell us, that they've been in, meetings that are inaccessible to us because of security clearance and the like, that there actually are nefarious things going on behind the scenes as a result of the Chinese government.
Well, I'd like to know what they are saying. I've been in the same briefings. Let me just say that based on public reporting, have there been a few instances of public reports that there's been leakage of data to China? Yes, there has. But the solution to that is then to ban that and to hold TikTok executives or people managing that accountable. It's not to say, okay, you're going to take 170 million Americans and shut down their speech. And by the way, a lot of the federal judges that have looked at this so far have agreed with me. We have a First Amendment in this country that is very, very broad and protective. And as people have realized with the campus protests, and you could disagree with the First Amendment. You could say we protect free speech too much in this country. I tend to like the First Amendment, and I think we should be very careful before we're having broad-based restrictions on it.
Congressman, just switching gears, the state of the House of Representatives right now, it's Seinfeld episode in a bizarro world. I just can't see a lot of this happening if the shoe were on the other foot. What do you did you'd vote to keep Speaker Johnson as Speaker?
I would. Look, I think he did the right thing. I think he put bills on the floor. He had us vote separately on Ukraine, on Taiwan, on Israel. What a novel concept that you should vote on a particular subject and not try to lump it all together. And I think if someone does the right thing, then they shouldn't lose their job. And I don't think we should be transactional about it. People are like, well, what are we going to get? Well, how about just he did the right thing, so we shouldn't let extreme folks take him out.
Right. So you don't think that you think that this strengthens his speakership, or do you think that if you're dealing with the enemy, that there must be some type of secret deal going on? I just can't see a Republican ever voting for any Democrat House Speaker, ever.
Well, Joe, that's because you're not in the House yet. I mean, I know if you were in the House, you'd be voting for me. But
I'm skipping that. That's too much work. We're going right. You know, we're heading right to the top. Except I only want the second spot. But you know what I mean? Do you think it helps him or hurts him overall?
I think it hurts him politically. I mean, that's why I think he showed some courage. I mean, he's obviously hurt amongst his own caucus. You need your caucus to continue in leadership usually. It's probably going to make it harder for him to stay as the leader after this term. But you know what? I mean, for all our dysfunction in this country's political process, and I know we can debate whether we spent too much or not, the reality is that America, of all the nations in the world, under two very different presidents, had the best response economically to COVID. We invented and discovered the vaccines, and now we're the single biggest reason that Ukraine is standing up to Putin. So a lot of things are still working in this country.
Right. All right. We just got to get the college stuff under control. You think President Biden ought to, you know, get out there and lead us morally on this? It's hard, I guess, but yeah. We don't have time.
A conversation in Wisconsin with Jewish students and Arab students, and they were very civil to each other. I think we got to do more of that. Let's get people talking to each other.
That's what we do. Okay, Congressman Khanna, thank you.
Thank you.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. You probably noticed that Becky Quick was on assignment today. That's because she's traveling to Omaha, Nebraska, where she'll cover the 2024 Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. It's a wild ride every year, and you don't want to miss a minute. We'll have special coverage on CNBC on Saturday, and we'll have a series of special episodes right here on Squawk Pod. So make sure you follow us and turn on your notifications so you don't miss it. If you happen to be a Berkshire shareholder and you aren't going to the meeting, submit a question for Warren Buffett or his board to berkshirequestions@cnbc.com. Becky will go through those submissions and choose a few to ask during the meeting. Okay, that's it. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Now we are clear. Thanks, guys.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.